Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast. The RTC features only the best OTR on our live stream, where we also invite you to tune in and enjoy the Radio Book Channel and the RTC Music Channel, all found at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome to this week's edition of the Weekly Download from the Radio Theater Channel. Today we're going to have a program that is played on Saturdays on the Radio Theater Channel. It's called Radio Remembered, and one of the two hosts is Bob Herman, and he'll be doing our show today. Bob's going to play for you, first of all, the Bob Hope Show with guest Jack Benny, and that'll be followed by Our Miss Brooks, and we'll follow that up with another 30-minute program, which I will tell you about after Radio Remembered.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of Radio Remembered. I'm your host, Bob Herman. Welcome aboard. I think two of my favorite comedians are Jack Benny and Bob Hope. And one of my favorite comedy programs is Our Miss Brooks. So this time you're going to hear some of my favorite comedians and favorite shows here. So to start out, this is the Bob Hope Show with guest Jack Benny.
Well, I swan.
Me too.
So do I.
How about you?
Yes, it's the new Swan Show with our great singing star, Doris Day.
Well, I swan.
A new singing favorite, Bill Farrow.
That's me.
Our guest, Jack Benny, Irene Ryan, the Four Hits and a Miss, the new Les Brown Band.
We use Swan exclusively. How about you?
Yes, how about you?
Who, me? My name is Robert Hopalong Hope.
And now, Bob Hope's Swan's Eye View of the News. Princeton, New Jersey. Hurried conferences and frantic alibis were the order of the day here as the nation's poll takers sought to explain their disastrous error in predicting the results of last week's election.
Dr. Gallup was amazed at the outcome, but he wouldn't admit he was wrong. Last night he was still peeking into the White House window and singing, "Maybe You'll Be There." He was really unhappy. When he saw the election returns, he exclaimed, "It's the last time I take a house-to-house survey. From now on, I'm going to ask people." I called up Elmer Roper and said, "How can your predictions be so wrong?" He said, "You see, we mathematicians make a prodigious effort to ascertain by statistical and prognostication and political prestidigitation the approximate parallelisms." I said, "What does that mean?" He said, "Where can I get a job?" And last Tuesday night, Drew Pearson said over the radio, "I predict Dewey will be elected by 10:30. At 11 o'clock, he said, "I predict Dewey." At 12, he said, "I predict." The next morning, he said, "Ay, ay, 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 ay."
New York, New York. Phone company executives announced here today that telephones for automobiles were at long last ready and available for Mr. Average Motorist.
I had a phone put in my car last week, but the wires must be crossed. Every time I step on the starter, the spark plugs give a busy signal, and the receiver squirts a quart of hot oil in my ear. But they're a big help to the motorist. If a guy's speeding, he can look in the rear vision mirror, see a cop trailing him, call his lawyer, and the three of them can meet at the next intersection. But think what it'll be like later on when cars have telephones and television, too. A guy's driving along, his wife calls up and says, "Honey, bring home a head of lettuce, some carrots, a cucumber, and get that tomato out of your car."
Washington, D.C. The greatest ovation in the history of the nation's capital greeted President Truman as a crowd of 750,000 cheered his triumphant return to the White House.
Yes, sir, it was at a reception. From every window they were throwing confetti and old cabinet members. And the world will long remember President Truman's historic words when he returned to the White House. He said, "It's okay, Bess, you can send the laundry out now." When Harry got back to the White House, he started hanging up his coat. Governor Warren stuck his head out of the closet and said, "I'll be out of your way as soon as I pack up my oranges." The Democrats did so well in that election, they're even coming out with new products named after the president. They got a new thing now called the Harry Truman Popsicle. It's a frozen Republican on a stick. And with the election coming out the way it did, a lot of people had to change their plans. Now Margaret Truman has to go back to the White House, and she had it all set to be the fourth Andrews sister. The three candidates have really changed their tune since the election. Truman's changed from Missouri Waltz to It's Magic. Dewey's humming Say It Isn't So, and Wallace is singing On a Slow Boat to China.
Announcing only 8 more days of the Swan 1949 Mercury Contest. Only 8 more days to win a brand new 1949 Mercury automobile. Right now, here are more winners in the daily Mercury Contest. October 19th, Mrs. Don Andrews of Portsmouth, Virginia.
A new 1949 Mercury.
October 20th, Mrs. B.V. Painter of San Diego, California.
A new 1949 Mercury.
October 21st, Mrs. Arlene Brewster of Topeka, Kansas.
A new 1949 Mercury.
October 22nd, duplicate winners, Mr. Fred S. Balsinger of Denver, Colorado, and Mrs. E.P. Williamson of Honolulu.
Each win a new 1949 Mercury.
October 25th, Mrs. Alvin M. David, Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
A new 1949 Mercury.
Congratulations, winners, and remember, folks, there are only 8 more days to enter. Lever Brothers is giving away a Mercury a day every day until November 19th.
That's right, a Mercury a day plus $1,000 in cash awards daily. There's a new contest every day except Saturday and Sunday, and you can enter as often as you please.
All residents of the continental United States, including Alaska and Hawaii, are eligible.
Just be sure to follow the complete rules printed on free entry blanks at your store. And be sure to include your storekeeper's name.
Here's all you do. Finish the following statement. I like Swan soap because, in 25 words or less. Then send a Swan soap wrapper together with your name and address to Lever's Mercury a Day Contest, Post Office Box 3, New York 8, New York.
Well, I swan.
A Mercury a Day.
That's right. Gee whiz.
Bye, Cracky.
Here's the gal who was selected as the Orchid Queen of the National Flower Festival, our singing orchid, Miss Doris Day.
Every day I love you just a little bit more, just a little bit more, a little bit more. Every day I want you just a little bit more. Day before, you'll never guess how deep my love is, not even in your wildest dream. But just so you get it clear, compared to my love, my dear, the Mississippi River's just a stream. Every day I love you just a little bit more, just a little bit more, a little bit more. Every day I want you just a little bit more than I did the day before, than I did,
than I did
the day.
Thank you, Doris Day. That was great. Next week, Morton Downey, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, you probably read in the papers last week that while making a picture at Paramount, Bob Hope tripped and tore a muscle in his right leg. Now let's look behind the scenes and see how an accident like this affects the motion picture industry. We take you to the production offices at Paramount, where the heads of the studio, Henry Geeksberg and Y. Free Frankman, are talking.
Say, YF.
Yes, H.G.?
I've been thinking. We've got a lot of money tied up in that character, Bob Hope. And if his leg doesn't get any better, he may never be in another Paramount picture. How could a thing like that happen to us?
Oh, I don't know. Just lucky, I guess.
But YF, what'll we do about Hope? His leg may be broken.
Yeah, too bad he ain't Trigger. We could shoot him.
You know how this accident happened, don't you, YF? Hope was doing that boat scene, and as he tried to get on board, he slipped and fell because somebody had put grease all over the gangplank. You know, it looks like someone is out to get him.
Yeah. Now, remember, H.G., if there's an investigation, we're in this thing together.
Well, it seemed like the easy way. And while we're on the subject, YF, we got to get rid of a lot of the actors over here. They're getting too old.
Yeah, how about that Crosby? Remember when we thought we had mice in the studio? We spent $5,000 to get rid of the mice and then found out it was Crosby's joints that were doing the squeaking.
You know, YF, I think Bing is about the same age as Hope.
Yeah, I know it. If we put them in another road picture, the road's got to be downhill. By the way, where's Hope now?
He's over in his dressing room, resting.
Oh, Doris, this pain is awful.
Oh, is it really that bad, Bob? Let me look at your leg. Oh, my gosh, it's all twisted out of shape, isn't it?
That's the wrong leg.
Gee, Bob, I hate to see you in such misery. Does it hurt much?
Well, I don't care about that. I just wish it had been my other knee.
Why?
Well, the knee I hurt is the one with the dimple in it. Now, I'll never be able to wear my pedal pushers with a split up the side.
Bob, I just don't understand how a thing like this could happen to you. You're so strong and husky.
Am I?
Yeah, and so loaded with vitality.
Honest?
Sure. Why, I always think of you as being a real He-Man.
You do?
Yes.
I have so much more than Gregory. Why should I fight it? Say, it was sure nice of you to drop in, though, Doris. I want to...
Hello, Doris. Hello, Mr. Ho.
Oh, hello, Miss Ryan.
Hello, Miss Ryan. How do you feel today?
Well, you know me. I always try to keep my chin up, even though my arches are falling. I heard about what happened to Mr. Hope, and I thought I'd come over and cheer him up.
Oh, thanks. You see, I hurt my leg, and I can't move it. It's nothing to worry about.
Oh, I don't know about that. My Uncle Julius had the same thing once in his shoulders, and he couldn't move his arms. The doctor made him leave them in one position.
Oh, that must have been terrible.
Well, it worked out all right. When he died 2 days later, his arms were already folded on his chest.
That's nice. Portia faces life. This gal backs into it.
Bob, you should listen to Miss Ryan. She can help you. She's been through a lot of these things, you know.
Oh, yes. I've never really been all well all my life. That is all of it, you know. Mr. Hope, it's been much worse. Yesterday, I thought I was losing my mind. All day long, I kept hearing voices in my head.
You were hearing voices in your head?
Yes, but I found out what it was. The battery in my hearing aid was low, and I was still getting the election return.
Well, don't worry. Hoover made it, you know. But it was nice of you to drop in, Miss Ryan.
Well, I do hope you get better. Oh, that reminds me, before I go, I wanted to show you a picture of my Uncle Julius, the one who died.
Well, what do I want to see a picture of him for?
Well, you might get worse. And if you don't pull through, it'll be nice if you know somebody when you get there. Keep your chin up now. Goodbye.
Thanks. If she ever gets married, she'll spend her honeymoon in the window of the Rexall drugstore.
Well, I have to be running along too, Bob. I promised High Averback I'd meet him. He's making a screen test over here.
Averback is making a screen test? You mean they've run out of talent?
Well, I think High will do very well in pictures because he just has...
Oh, hello, everybody. Hello, Doris.
Oh, hello, High. Are you all ready for your screen test?
Yes, Doris. I just came from the makeup department.
They didn't get your ears on straight.
At least my lobes are on the bottom. Well, now, Doris, how about running through the screen test with me like you promised?
Okay, hand me the script.
Yeah, now, the scene we're doing takes place in a New York penthouse. We're social leaders and we're married, but we're splitting up. Now, you have the first line, and I want you to pay close attention to my diction.
Montgomery, I'm afraid that you and I are through. It's regrettable, but we can't go on.
Yes, Alice. I'm so sorry that we must split. But I'm afraid we must go our separate ways.
Don't you think you're carrying too many pounds of pressure there?
Well,
Lobes on upside down. Okay, it's all right.
Well, Montgomery, if we're parting... I insist that you give me the house.
You may have the house.
And I want the Cadillac and the two Mercurys.
They're yours, but there's one thing you may not have.
If you're speaking of the children, I want them.
You may have the children, my riches, and my home. But I insist that you leave one thing.
What?
That cake of swan soap in the kitchen.
Jimmy Fiddler will give this picture four bubbles.
Yes, Alice. Alice, take everything. But please, please don't take that swan. Swan is the newer, better white floating soap. Swan never crumples like our dream castles did. No, sir, you can use Swan right down to the last smooth sliver. And why? Because Swan is made by a modern patented process that no other soap can use. A process that makes Swan better for dishes and hands. Swan is as mild as the finest Castile. It protects your hands, keeps them soft and smooth.
He's right. My hands are so soft, when I want to point at anybody, I have to starch one finger.
Oh, Alice. Alice, I can't leave you. Just think, a cake of swan brought us together again. I still love you.
And I love you.
I love you, Alice.
Oh, I love you, Monty.
I'm engaged to the Lever brothers.
Yes, for your hands, your bath, and for baby's bath. Swan is the best soap afloat.
Well, I swan.
Me too.
Yes, sir.
Bye, Cracky.
Here's our junior crooner we borrowed from the Oasis this week. The 19-year-old Bill Farrell, ladies and gentlemen.
There is no verse to this song, 'cause I don't want to wait a moment too long to say that I'd love to get you on a slow boat to China all to myself alone. Get you and keep you in my arms evermore. Leave all your lovers weeping on the faraway shore. Out on the briny with the moon big and shiny, melting your heart of stone. Yes, I want to get you on a slow boat to China, all to myself alone. Yes, I wanna get you on a slow boat to China, all to myself alone. On a real slow boat,
on a real slow boat,
on a slow, slow boat to China.
That's my son from Cleveland, Billy Farrell. Thank you very much. Singing Slow Boat to China. Now, tonight, ladies and gentlemen, tonight we're going to present a very different kind of a thing here. We have a thing here. Musicians, please, no tuning while the star is on, please. Now, as I was saying, please. Hey, you. Hey, Evelyn, stop with that magic violin.
I resent that.
Well, Jack Benny, ladies and gentlemen. Jack, what are you doing here?
Some surprise. We rehearsed 9 weeks already.
Bob, look, I heard about your leg, and I thought I'd pay you a visit.
Well, that's swell of you, Jack, but how come you're sitting in with Les Brown's orchestra?
Well, just once I wanted to play in a band and not worry about the leader's breath taking the varnish off my violin.
Ha!
Well, you don't have to worry about Les. Les hasn't been high since Petrillo picked him up to burp him. But look, it was awfully nice of you to drop in to see me, Jack.
Well, I was sorry to hear about your accident, Bob.
Yeah, it's a little uncomfortable, but the worst of it is whenever I hobble down the street, people keep throwing money in my hat. They do?
Gosh, how embarrassing. That's terrible. That must be awful.
Bob, how much do you average a block? Oh, it varies. But take my advice, Jack. Stay away from Beverly Hills. Nothing but Dewey buttons. But I can't get over how nice it is of you to drop in on me, Jack.
Well, Bob, that's the way it is with us troopers. You know, we show people have to stick together in these times of trouble. Why, as soon as I heard of your accident, I rushed right over here to be the first one at your side.
Jack, you came over just to help me?
Well, yes. Of course, if you buy the insurance policy I have in mind, it helps me a little, too. You know?
Jack, why are you selling insurance?
Well, you see, it's a little early to start unloading my line of Christmas cards.
Well, Jack, I don't get this. You're a wealthy man. You're worth millions of dollars.
Whoops.
Selling insurance, huh? Well, have you got a sample policy you can show me there in your portfolio? Jack, did you hear that?
No, I didn't hear anything.
You sure you didn't hear that echo?
No, kid, this is your show.
Well, look, Jack, let's face it. This is ridiculous. You don't have to sell insurance. You're a star. They write about you in the Saturday Evening Post. You're one of the outstanding comedians in show business. One of them. You don't mind me throwing that in there, do you?
No. This is still your show.
No, but you're really great, Jack. People stay at home on Sundays just to listen to your radio show.
I have so much more than Fred Allen. Why should I fight?
Say, wait a minute. That's my gag.
I'll trade you for the yodel.
What'll my sponsor say?
Well, I swan.
Me too.
Yes, sir.
Bye, Cracky.
That's right.
Wait a minute.
Gee whiz.
My goodness.
Of course.
And how?
Wait a minute.
I'll say.
Hurry up.
You bet.
Who, huh?
Wait a minute.
Yes, sir.
By Cracky.
Wait a minute!
Easy, Jack. Either we peddle the stuff this way or I have to put on a pair of water wings and sell it bathtub to bathtub.
My next line is a humdinger. Wait a minute. Bathtub to bathtub, huh? I have trouble with my sponsor, too. That's a dandy line. Thanks, Bob. I rehearsed 4 weeks for that line.
Well, we were going to give you something you could get your teeth into, but we weren't sure you'd have them with you tonight.
You wouldn't dare say that if you were still with Pepsodent, brother. You coward.
Let's get back to this stuff, huh?
Now look. We'll never get through with this tonight. Look at it. You know, Bob, you know who has
Stand
the
by,
sweetest...
Fibber.
You know who has the sweetest... Page 15. You know who has the sweetest...
I'm not...
You know who has the sweet... Never get off.
Wait
you
a minute.
You know who has... I want to play the violin yet. Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. Are we still on?
You know who has the sweetest racket radio, don't you? The disc jockey.
Disc jockeys. You mean one of those guys who says, this next record is sponsored by the Happy Hunting Ground Funeral Home, and now the orchestra plays, he's a real gone guy?
We haven't got time to wait.
See, why don't we try... Please, your laughs, not mine, please. Say, why don't we try our hand at being disc jockey, Jack? All we have to do is make the rounds of the music shops and pick up a couple of 100 records.
Well, I don't know.
For free.
Shoot the wax to me, Max.
We'd be great as a team of disc jockeys. As they say in radio, I can just hear it now.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You are listening to station SLOB, the biggest on the coast. And now we present Jazzy Jack Benny and Bebop Bob in their original radio record show, Make Believe Washroom.
Hi, Dad. This is your old disc jockey, Bebop Bob, with another knocked-out record section. It's all on wax and it's real mad, so you kids who want to get your kicks, lace up your boots and latch on to some of this frantic jive that we're going to send swinging your way. Right now, cats, I'd like to turn the mic over to a real hep character, the man who knows all the answers in the world of jazz, that solid Jet Mark Platter partner, Jazzy Jack Benny.
Hotcha, Bodio Doe.
Solid Jack.
And now, before we spin our next platter for you kids, we'd like to tell you the next minute half of our show is sponsored by Dr. Capstaff's weight reducing plan.
We'd like a word with those of you ladies who weigh over 400 pounds. Do you have the feeling that you're being followed? You are. It's you.
And you men over 400 pounds, do you have large stomachs? When you get your shoes shined, you have to take the bootblack's word for it.
Why not try Dr. Capstaff's weight-reducing pill?
Yes, to take off those extra pounds, try Dr. Capstaff's method. No diet, no pills, no injections, no exercise. Once a week, Dr. Capstaff comes to your house and beats you with a rubber hose. And now we're going to play our first record. It's a little tune called I'm Dancing with Tears in My Eyes because the girl in my arms had onions for dinner.
It's going to be played by Woody Gribbiness, and as you should live so long, if you can find the melody orchestra. Hit it, Woody.
Ah, thanks, Woody. That was great.
Look, Bebop, a bunch of new releases just arrived.
Gee, there's some interesting titles. Look at this one. You used to be the cream in my coffee, but now you're just grounds for divorce.
Get a load of this one. If you were the only girl in the world and I was the only boy, I wonder who I'd play handball with at the Y.
Here's my favorite. Hair of gold, eyes of blue, lips like cherry wine. I never should have stomped on them with my bare feet. Say, suppose we play that one right now.
Okay, but first, a word from our sponsor.
Yes, this next record is coming to you through the courtesy of Slushies, the only breakfast cereal that's shot out of a water pistol.
Folks, you'll just love Slushies. They don't snap, crackle, and pop like other breakfast cereals. They just lie there anew.
Mothers, you would cheer when you see the way your kids dive into a bowl of Slushies. They never come up again. Listen to what one happy user of Slushies has to say.
I've been eating Slushies for nigh on to 30 years. And I want to tell you something. I'm getting mighty tired.
You, Effie Spoon of Battle Creek, Michigan. Say, Jack, what's next on the turntable?
Oh, the folks will just love this one.
Yes, sir. It's a new release that features a duet by that brilliant young Waukegan violinist, Benny Kabelski.
And that new Cleveland singing discovery, the Velvet Smog.
Okay, shall we give it a whirl?
Yeah.
Oh, east is east, and west is west, and the wrong one I have chose. Let's go where you keep on wearing those bills and flowers and buttons and bows, rings and things and buttons and bows. Don't bury me in this prairie, take me where the she-man grows. Let's move down to some big town where they love a gal by the cut of her clothes, and you'll stand out in buttons and bows.
No practicing on our time, please.
I love you in buckskin skirts that you homestead, but I love you longer, stronger, where your friends don't load a gun. Now's the buckboard bounce and a cactus hurts my tears. Let's rambles where gals keep using those silks and satins and linen that shows, and you're all mine in buttons and bows.
Thank you, Jack. Thank you very much. You've been fine. That's fine, Jack. Thank you. Next week, ladies and gentlemen. Jack, wait a minute, Jack. We have next week. It's all over, kids. Pack up. Okay. We have another. Next week, we have Morton Downey, ladies and gentlemen. That Coca. Say, okay, Jack. Wait a minute. It's all over, Jack. Jack, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
Thanks for the memory of the vote in 48. A chance to demonstrate whom we endorse to chart the course of our U.S. ship of state.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, we'd like to pay a tribute to that fighting man from Missouri who stepped into the ring last Tuesday with the odds against him and came out the winner and still champion of the USA, President Harry S. Truman.
Well, the date on that Bob Hope show was November 9th, 1948.
And now let's listen to a comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden.
Madison High School, think of Mr. Boynton, the bashful biologist, as an extremely handsome, virile, irresistible individual. But Our Miss Brooks, who teaches English there, can take him with a grain of salt.
In fact, I could take him with a whole spoonful. But why waste salt on a fellow who's too shy to toss in a little pepper now and then? Last Friday at breakfast, I foolishly provoked a discussion of the matter with my landlady. Honestly, Mrs. Davis, he's more attentive to his animals. Why, yesterday he hardly noticed me because he took his dog to school for the day. It doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. What can a dog learn in one measly day?
Serves me right for mentioning it. May I have some toast, please?
Oh, here you are, dear. It might have all... Oh, ah, that's a good girl. Well, I'll gather up the dishes now.
Just a minute. Two and two equals meow?
Certainly. There are four letters in meow, aren't there? Of telling me that the answer is four. Two meows equal eight. Three meows equal 12, and so on. Oh, it's funny, though. She isn't so hot on the odd numbers.
Look, Mrs. Davis, I started this conversational maze with the simple statement that Mr. Boynton brought his dog to school yesterday.
Well, Connie, then it's simple.
What's simple?
You should do something to show Mr. Boynton how much you love animals.
Like what?
Well... Why didn't you take Minerva to school with you today?
Oh, let's not be ridiculous, Mrs. Davis. I couldn't possibly take Minerva to... Well, come to think of it, Mr. Boynton is extremely fond of cats. It might make a hit at that. Do you think she'd behave herself in my classroom?
Of course she would. She can stretch out on the seat cushion I ordered for your classroom.
Seat cushion?
You mentioned how trying it is sitting on that hard chair all day. Still, I thought I'd surprise you.
Oh, that's very sweet of you, Mrs. Davis.
Don't mention it. I mailed a letter last night telling the store where to send it, along with another note to the place where I ordered Victor's gift.
Your brother Victor?
Yes. He's every bit as fond of animals as Mr. Boynton is. That's why I bought one for him yesterday.
Oh, that's nice, Mrs. Davis. What did you get him?
A cow.
A cow?
Yes. It's a female.
Those are the best kinds. Why on earth would you...
Victor just moved into a little farmhouse on the edge of town, Connie. It's only a 15-minute drive from here. By and by, he'll be adding more livestock, of course. But right now, with just the one cow, I figured he'd have his hands full.
He plays his cards right. Well, I'd better dash off to school, Mrs. Davis. I'll have to use all my powers of persuasion to get Mr. Conklin's permission to take Minerva into class with me.
All right, dear. Just put Minerva into this valise I bought for her at the pet shop. It's a cat carrier. You might leave the lid open for her, though.
Oh, that won't be necessary. There are holes in the side through which she can breathe. In you go, Minerva. Here, I'll give you a hand.
Meow.
Oh, that's what I like about Minerva. She's so polite. Whenever you help her out, she always says four.
You may be principal of this school, Osgood Conklin, but as long as I am head of the Board of Education, you will take orders from me. Is that clear?
Quite clear, Mr. Stone. Crystal clear. Couldn't be clearer. You are also...
Silence!
My lips are sealed.
Why, when I saw that dog running loose outside the biology lab yesterday, I was shocked beyond words. You know that animals aren't allowed on school property, Osgood. How did it get in here? Answer me.
Well, I haven't the slightest idea, sir.
Let's make certain that no dogs invade the school today. First, you will make an early inspection tour of all classrooms. Then I want you to post a guard at the front door throughout the day.
But, sir, why commission someone to do a job for which I myself am ideally suited? I'll keep a weather eye open, sir. You may be sure no animal will get past me. Come in.
Good morning, Mr. Conklin. Oh, hello, Mr. Stone.
Good morning, Miss Brooks. Are you going somewhere?
Going some... Oh, this valise. If I may ask your permission, Mr. Conklin.
Permission for what?
Well, you'll see as soon as I open the bag. It'll just take me a minute. Excuse me, Mr. Stone.
Go right ahead. Glad you dropped in, Miss Brooks. Perhaps you can shed some light on the identity of the culprit who dared to bring an animal into this school yesterday.
An animal, Mr. Stone?
Specifically, a dog. When I saw it romping around outside the biology lab, I came in here to report the incident to Mr. Conklin. When I returned to the spot, it had vanished.
Good. Some of those spots stay on forever. I'm afraid I can't be of much help to you, Mr. Stone. You see, mine is an English class, and I'm not one of those who are, in the habit of hanging around other labs. The labs of others, I mean. So I couldn't really shed any light on the identity of which the dog belonged to who.
And exactly how long have you had this English class, Miss Brooks?
You bet. Well, please forgive my faulty syntax, Mr. Stone. The thought of a beast on the premises has frazzled my nerves a bit. Well, goodbye now.
One moment. You were going to open that bag, remember?
Bag? What bag? Oh, the bag. Oh, well, you really wouldn't want to look at what's in this bag, sir. It's nothing but...
What was that?
I said I'll run along now and meow. Meow, that's a new expression some of the kids use. It's real cool, I think.
Meow.
Meow. Instead of saying goodbye, they say meow. Silly, isn't it? Sometimes I stretch it out with a little Western drawl. Well, meow now, Mr. Stone. Meow, Mr. Conklin.
Meow.
Meow.
Now, that was mighty peculiar behavior. She galloped out of here like a frightened antelope.
Yes, and it's my guess that right now she and her Western drawl are loping over to the old bunkhouse in Mr. Boynton's lab.
Hello there, Miss Brooks.
Howdy. Please sit down, Mr. Boynton. We've got a little palavering to do.
Well, can it wait, Miss Brooks? I was just on my way to the cloakroom to feed Geraldine.
Geraldine?
You know, my dog. She's a boxer.
And if Mr. Conklin drops in, she'd better come out fighting. That's what I came to warn you about.
Warn me?
Yes, he's on an anti-animal kick. Mr. Stone happened to see Geraldine in the hall yesterday, and he was furious. Luckily, he doesn't know who her owner is yet.
Gosh, I guess I should have asked Mr. Conklin's permission. Oh, but there's little chance of my dog being discovered in here, Miss Brooks. Mr. Stone rarely comes into my lab. The same goes for Mr. Conklin.
Oh, well, then maybe my cat can hide out here for the day.
Your cat?
Yeah, I'll let her out of the bag. I certainly wouldn't want Mr. Conklin to find out I'm a cat rustler. Out you come, Minerva. You won't mind taking care of her for me, will you, Mr. Boynton?
Oh, not at all. Come here, baby.
All righty. Oh, you mean her.
I'm crazy about cats, Miss Brooks. Why, the minute I see one, I can't resist nestling it in my arms and stroking its little head.
Mrs. Davis ordered a seat cushion sent to my class today, Miss Boynton. I'll bring it over so that Minerva can stretch out in comfort.
Oh, that'll be dandy. I saw Mrs. Davis at the movies last night, and she told me about her brother Victor's farmhouse and that she's buying him a cow. I just love cows, don't you?
Madly. Oh, I love all animals, Mr. Boynton.
You know, sometimes I get to thinking about my childhood days on Dad's farm, Miss Brooks. Oh, I miss those days a lot. I hope Victor asks me out to his farm someday.
We can both go out someday. Some night, I mean. Some night when Victor isn't home. We can stroll in the meadow, hand in hand, with the moonlight pouring down.
That sounds pretty thrilling, Miss Brooks. And if you're with me and it's a very nice evening, you think it'd be all right to... Well...
Yes, Mr. Byrne?
Well, do you think Victor would let me milk his cow?
Both milk her. You take the left side, and I'll take the right side, and I'll be homogenized before you. Oh, great. Speaking of milk, has evidently whipped up Minerva's appetite. Steady, Minerva.
Mr. Conklin.
Yipe.
At ease. I hope you'll forgive this intrusion, Boynton. I just dropped into... Oh, hello, little pussycat. I say I just dropped in to make certain there are no dogs in here. Not that I suspect you, Boynton, but I just thought I'd take a look around. Well, I don't see any dogs on the premises. No dogs at all. Sorry to trouble you. I'll just run along now. And hello, little pussycat!
I have it. Let's all play charades.
Will do. Out with it now. To whom does this cat belong?
Cat? What cat? Oh, the pussycat. It's quite a pussycat, isn't it? Silky. It's a girl cat, no doubt. Mr. Boynton and I hadn't noticed her.
Oh, that's right. She must have strayed in, sir. Nonsense. Miss Brooks, I'm beginning to understand those phantom meows I heard in my office. Now then.
What are you doing to the cat's collar, Mr. Conklin?
I'm removing it, Miss Brooks. It'll be an easy matter to determine the person who owns her by simply checking the number on this license tag. That person, needless to say, is a dead duck.
Having heard nothing from Mr. Conklin during my morning classes, I presumed that he had not as yet traced the number on Minerva's license tag. As I left my classroom for lunch, however, the figure of a sentry armed with a BB rifle loomed up before me.
Halt! Step forward and be recognized.
It's me, Mr. Conklin.
Oh, step back and be unrecognized.
Aye, aye, sir. And so, having been honorably discharged, I hiked down to the school cafeteria and ordered chow. It was then that Walter Denton beckoned me to his table.
Hey, over here, Miss Brooks. Wilt thou not visit me? The plant beside me feels thy gentle dew, and every blade of grass I see from thy deep earth, its quickening moisture drew.
I ordered meatballs. What have you got?
The same. I guess you didn't care for that bit of poetry I quoted, huh, Miss Brooks?
You guessed right, Walter.
Well, how do you like this one? You'd never have let the cat from the bag if you knew Mr. Conklin would grab her tag.
You're either psychic or a sneak. How'd you find out I'm up the creek?
Provocative question, Miss Brooks. You will recall that shortly before first class this morning, our beloved principal invaded Mr. Boynton's lab and trapped you dead to rights with your furry friend.
With two furry friends, Mr. Boynton lost his razor.
Yeah. Well, at that time, I happened to be standing in the hall just outside the lab, and presently I heard excitement-laden voices wafted through the transom. And now, that was a moment of great decision for me, Miss Brooks. I could have either hewed to the path of dishonor by remaining in the hall and eavesdropping, or I could have taken the glorious avenue of decency by closing my ears and leaving the scene.
Well?
Yeah, I took the dirty road out.
For shame. But you still don't know all the details, Walter.
The au contraire, Miss Brooks. I was about to say that some minutes later, I confronted Mr. Boynton with the juicy morsels I had overheard, informed him that I should like to be acquainted with all the facts, and requested that he sing.
And he sang?
F.E.O. Pinza would have envied him.
Well, this is no laughing matter, Walter. When Mr. Conklin traces Minerva's license tag...
Well, he didn't have time to trace it this morning, Miss Brooks, and it's too late now. Here is a little gift as a token of my esteem.
Walter, it's the tag. How did you get it?
Like I said, Miss Brooks, I'm pretty perfidious at times. When Mr. Conklin left his office for a few moments, I sneaked in, made off with a tag, and ever since then he's been flipping his lid wondering what happened to it.
But that's stealing. That's a dreadful thing to do, Walter, and thanks a million.
You're entirely welcome. The only one thing worries me, Miss Brooks. Since Mr. Conklin can't establish ownership, he'll probably confiscate your cat and send her to the pound.
Oh, no. We can't let that happen to Minerva. Somehow we've got to spring her. I have an idea, Walter. You've got to sneak her out of the biology lab through the window and then take her to Mrs. Davis's brother's farmhouse. It's only a 15-minute drive from here, so you can report back to me in my classroom before the end of lunch period.
Check. I know a shortcut to the farmhouse, Miss Brooks. I helped Victor move some furniture in day before yesterday.
Well, after Walter promised to sneak Minerva out of school to Victor's farm, The only problem remaining was what to do about Mr. Boynton's dog. In my classroom shortly after noon, I told Mr. Boynton what Walter had done.
Well, I doubt that he'll get back here before the end of lunch period, Miss Brooks. It's almost 1 o'clock now.
Excuse me, Mr. Boynton. I want to steal a little peek into the hallway. No sentry. Mr. Conklin apparently ducked out for a bite. Now's your chance to get rid of your dog.
Oh, I've already taken care of that. I simply lowered Geraldine out the window and told her to go home. She'll be lying on the doorstep waiting for me after school, Miss Brooks. You see, she's been trained. No matter where she knows how to get to my apartment house.
So do I, but what good does it do?
Your cat to the farm, okay, Miss Brooks?
Nice work, Walter. Did you turn her over to Mrs. Davis?
Not exactly. She was out shopping when I got there, but I left Minerva with her brother Victor as soon as he got through with the delivery man.
Delivery man?
Yeah. Some guy was delivering a seat cushion.
What? But that cushion was supposed to be delivered to my classroom. Good old absent-minded Mrs. Davis.
Miss Brooks?
Yes?
A sign here.
For what?
For this.
No. Wait a minute, mister. This is a cow.
You got good eyes, lady. We give you the bucket free.
Gosh, a real cow. I haven't milked a cow in 14 years. Hand me that bucket, Walter.
Oh, no, you don't. This is no time to improve your handshake. And listen, mister, my landlady evidently got confused. There's been a dreadful mistake, but you'll simply have to take back this cow.
Oh, I'm sorry, lady. That'll take a separate order, and our company's jammed up for the day. Give him a call, though. Maybe we can take her tomorrow.
Well, you've got to be reasonable. You can't leave a cow here overnight. This is a public school under the supervision of the federal government.
Let's keep politics out of this. I'll be going now. So long, lady.
Uh-oh. I just caught a glimpse of Mr. Conklin and his daughter Harriet coming up the school steps.
What'll we do? Mr. Boynton, cut that out.
Sorry, I lost my head.
Look in the bucket.
I'll see you later, Daddy.
Fine. I'll be right here on sentry duty. No silly cat or dog is going to get past me today.
Boy, you're sure going to get a surprise from some silly cow.
Not if I can help it. Quick, close the door. Now listen carefully, Walter. I want you to stay here with the cow and see that absolutely no one enters this classroom. Then after school's over, when the sentry leaves, we can escape with the cow.
Yeah, okay, Miss Brooks, you can depend on me.
Now, what can I do to help, Miss Brooks?
Just hand me that valise. The other one.
Steady, girl, steady. You're on good hand. 3:10, Walter. As soon as Miss Brooks gets back, we can...
Who goes there?
A friend. I'm unarmed.
Wait till I pull the chair away from the door.
Hi, Miss Brooks. See anybody in the hall?
Just Harriet Conklin. She was on her way to a dramatic club meeting. I saw Mr. Conklin getting into his car, so now's our chance to make the break. You men bring up the rear. We girls will lead the way. Come along, Bossy. Now keep your eyes peeled, Walter. You too, Mr. Boynton. If you see anybody...
Yeah, holy smoke! Quick, push her in here. I'll open the door.
But Walter!
No time to explain. And you go, Bossy. Come on. In.
All right, Walter. Now would you mind explaining what we and the strange cow are doing in Mr. Conklin's office?
Well, I just saw Harriet Conklin coming down the stairs. Oh, but we're safe in here. She never comes into Mr. Conklin's office when he isn't around.
Oh, quick thinking, Walter.
Hi, Daddy. I thought you'd gone home.
I forgot something in my office, Harriet.
Oops, he's around. Down.
What on earth is going on in there? Well, I'll soon find out.
Back the cow into the closet. Hurry.
Come on, Bossy. Back. Back.
Come on, hold on.
That's it. That's it.
Oh. Now, if she'll only stay quiet until Mr. Conklin...
Over Miami.
Oh, hello, Mr. Conklin.
Miss Brooks. Boynton. Denton. What are you doing here?
Well, sir, we were just...
Moon of Monocura.
I demand to know what you are doing in my office.
Well, sir, we were just...
Yes, Is the song fest over now?
Miss Conklin, somehow I feel more coming on. I'm in the mood for love simply because you're...
Oh, shut up!
You all sound like a herd of sick cattle. The last time, what are you doing here?
Well, sir, we just dropped in to say goodbye on our way home.
I left here 5 minutes ago, but I forgot my hat. I'll get it out of the closet and we can all go together.
What an awful way to go. Oh, surely you don't need a hat on such a lovely day, sir. Why not skip the closet?
Step aside, Miss Brooks.
Yes, sir.
Pardon me, please. Take it easy. I just want to get my hat. Seems to be on the floor.
I can just reach it. I've got it now.
Oh, I am sorry. Now I've got it. Now I can... Pardon me again, please. Will one of you kindly tell me that I didn't see what I just saw in that closet?
You had a rough day on sentry duty, sir. Overwork very often causes one's mind to play tricks that are...
Oh, yes, of course. But, I'm convinced the whole thing was a mirage, notwithstanding the indisputable fact that my hat here, as you can plainly see, is half filled with cream. Just to reassure myself, however, I'd like to take another look in the closet. This time you will follow me, Miss Brooks.
Oh, it's rather late, Mr. Conklin. Let's do it in the morning.
You'll follow me now, Miss Brooks. And I do mean now.
Yes, sir.
Well, I hope you enjoyed that comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks. I apologize for the quality, but it was a very funny story, I thought. So, I'm all out of time. Hope you'll join me again next time when we will once again turn back the hands of time to the days when radio truly did reign supreme. Till then, this is Bob Herman saying be good to yourselves and be good to one another. Take care, won't you? Bye-bye.
And there you are, Bob Hope Show and Our Miss Brooks as prepared for radio, remembered with Bob Herman. At this point in the show, we want to remind you that you can hear the Radio Theater Channel anytime on your computer and in a number of other formats. You go to oldtimeradiolisten.com for schedule information, and you can click on Listen there, too, to hear Bob Herman and other programs from the Radio Theater Channel. Next up, we have an episode of Night Beat, and I don't have any details on this program, so we'll be listening together to it. Here it is, Night Beat.
NBC presents, transcribed, Frank Lovejoy in Night Beat.
Hi, this is Randy Stone. I cover the Night Beat for the Chicago Star. You never know when there's magic in a story. I mean the magic that takes a routine yarn and suddenly electrifies the whole country, giving the good people an emotional bath. You take the story of Jody Levering, age 5, going on 6. At noon Sunday, the Lost Boy report came in, just one of 40 or 50 on a normal day. But the boy hadn't been found by 8 o'clock that night. And then the story broke on the other side of town, down among the lower bistro set in Lost Man's Canyon, where an ancient church with its tall spire benignly spreads its protection over a neighborhood that consists of missions, pawn shops, buy-your-shoes of the shirt-off-your-back second-hand stores, 5 and 10 Muscatel shops, and honky-tonks. Jody Levering, 5 going on 6, missing. And in the church, Father Clary was preparing for evening prayers. Miss Gately, the organist, was at the organ when the old caretaker wandered through the vestibule.
Time to ring the bell, Father?
Certainly, John.
Good. Here we go. My gosh. Father?
Yes, John, what is it?
There's something wrong up in the tower. The bell doesn't...
Oh, let me try. First time I've ever had trouble with it.
Guess I better go up.
You be careful. Those wooden steps.
I haven't been up them for a long time, have I? I'll get the bell fixed in a jiffy.
It was a friendly sort of church, over 60 years old, with the kind of stained glass windows and rows of worn benches you rarely see anymore. The organ was on the right side of the altar. And behind it was a door that opened onto the rickety wooden stairs leading up 65 feet to the belfry. Father Clary stood at the bottom of the circular stairway and peered up into the darkness of the bell tower as John, puffing and sighing, reached the top. And suddenly...
John! John! John, are you all right? I told you to be careful.
Bush. Bush.
What?
Stay out! Stay out!
Who is it? Who's up there?
Stay away, you hear? If you even try to come near me, I'll kill the boy!
That's the way it broke. Jody Levering, 5 going on 6, no longer missing. Now found in the bell tower of the Church of St. Francis. But how do you get him down? A man up there with him who didn't think twice about pushing an old man down a 65-foot stairway. The extras hit the street inside of 7 minutes. Child hostage in church tower. That was the magic. It went over the wire services. Inside of 12 minutes, it had spread from the Atlantic to the Pacific, from Mexico to Canada. And before the extras had hit the street, the people of the night had drifted out of the bars, the muscatel shops, the tattoo emporiums, and dark doorways. And they'd congregated on the sidewalks and flowed over into the street. Their necks craned upward, up to the belfry of the old church. The police threw a cordon around the church, and the fire department was there with ladders and nets, equipment for catching a falling body.
I know who the man is, Randy.
No, not yet.
And what did he come here for?
It'll be interesting to find out. Sterling! Lieutenant Sterling!
Hey, yeah, what is it, Stone?
Anything I can do?
Yeah, keep out of the way.
Who is it up there?
How do I know? Look, don't get underfoot. This is tough. Get that mic around the front, Sergeant. I want the loudspeaker set over here.
He can't last up there.
No, neither can the boy.
Yeah, it's just a question of hanging around until something happens. Cut and dry. They'll toss in some tear gas and it'll be all over.
If you were up there, what would you use to protect yourself?
The boy.
Yeah, the boy.
But the guy's a sucker. He can't get away with it.
Well, sure he can't, but what about the boy? Police can't do anything if it'll hurt that kid. That killer's got more protection up there than an armory you'd give him.
This is the police. Hello up there. You have no way out. You might as well come down peacefully. Give up the child. You're entirely surrounded. There's no way out for you.
Mark! Mark! Here he is! He's alive!
He was holding the boy out of the tiny window up at the top of the tower. And suddenly, no one was breathing. No one in that whole crowd all around me. The child dangling in space 65 feet from the ground.
But if you come near me, I'll drop you! If you try anything at all,
He pulled the boy back into the tower. Everybody began to breathe again, a little shocked, a little thrilled, too.
What a picture that would make, huh, Stone?
You know where I can get some binoculars, Harry?
Huh? Binoculars?
Yeah, I might be able to see into the window of that tower from the top of that building down the street.
Say, that's right. It is about the same height.
It'd help if we knew what he was doing.
Ah, binoculars. Yeah. Yeah, Beckett, turf column.
Can you reach him?
I'll give him a buzz.
Good. Listen, if you come down, it'll save us all a lot of time and trouble. Do you hear me up there?
Keep the monk alive.
Won't do any good now. Maybe later. Connors.
Yes, sir.
Get those searchlights on.
Yes, sir.
Light them.
Hey, Lieutenant, if we could get a tear gas bomb in that window, I got a pretty good throwing arm.
Even if you were Grover Cleveland Alexander, what have you missed?
Oh, it was inspirational. That magic in a story all around me, standing on the sidewalk across from the Church of St. Francis. Looking up where the cones of light speared the tiny window. And then something real came out of the crowd. The child's mother.
Jody, my baby.
Mrs. Levering, it'd be better if you didn't... Connors.
Yes?
Jody.
See that she stays in my car. Have someone stay with her.
Jody, Jody.
Oh, where's your husband, Mrs. Levering?
Jody.
Your husband. Where is he?
Where...
Connors, take care of her. I want those lights kept up there on the
my
tower.
My husband's not here. In New York, I'm busy. Jody!
We're going to save him, Mrs.
No. Hello, Father.
Mr. Stone.
How's the old gentleman who was knocked down the stairs?
Oh, John, his legs are broken, but he'll be all right.
Any way to get up there, Father? A back way or anything?
Just the wooden stairs, Lieutenant, as far as I know. There are some musty old rooms and hallways downstairs. You know how they built a church 60 years ago.
Yeah.
Lieutenant, I'm going up.
Going up? Where?
Up the wooden stairs inside the church to the belfry.
But
I can't leave that child up there. I can't.
It's dangerous, Father.
It's dangerous not going up, Mr. Stone.
But, Father...
Oh, no. I'll be all right. He won't harm me.
Father Clary went back inside the church and I followed him. He went down the long aisle, past the organ, and through the door. I stood and watched him start up the rickety stairs. He wouldn't let me go with him. He wouldn't let me talk him out of it. A short and stocky man, puffing a little, past 60, holding onto the flimsy railing as he went up and up the circular stairs. What do you do? What kind of logic do you use? Surround the church... Get the fire department nets out, try to think of everything the maniac up there could think of, but no way to prevent Jody Levering's death. Sure, you could get him, but how long would it take to throw a 40-pound child out of a stone window? In which direction would he throw him? How far out? You play games with a child's life?
I said don't come up here! I'll kill him!
Father Clary's footsteps stopped, and he began talking. I couldn't hear the words. I knew what they were, but I couldn't hear them.
I'll kill him! I'll kill him! I'll kill
him! I didn't have to go outside to know what was happening. Holding him out the window, threatening to throw the child. I looked up into the blackness of the bell tower. Father Clary was coming down. And at the bottom, my reporter friend had a cameraman ready to get some pictures of Father Clary.
Now take it from that angle, Angie. Get a shot of Father Clary's face.
Not missing any bets, huh, Harry?
Oh, hello, Randy. I got those binoculars for you. Here he comes, Angie. He'll be tired. Get an angle on the face. I want his eyes. I want to see the defeat. Father!
Not a picture.
Get it, Angie. What'd he say, Father?
He wouldn't kill me. He wasn't interested in killing me.
Yeah, but what did he say?
Mr. Stone, what can we do?
Were you able to see him, Father?
Oh, it is too dark.
His voice, young, old?
Can I have another shot of your father?
His voice? How can you tell?
Sick?
Yes, sick. His soul is sick.
How about it, Father? Another picture?
Outside the church in the street, the crowd kept growing, pushed back by the police. Dark faces in a dark night, their eyes roving incessantly, a little undercurrent in them. What do they think, these people? Do they think like Mrs. Levering, who can't think anything because there's the white heat of fear in her? Jody, 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 that's all. Just a name, 5 going on 6. What do you think, you eating a sandwich, and you smoking a pipe? A pipe that's for chess, for reading, for a gentle kind of thinking. What's in your mind, stranger? What are you thinking about puffing your pipe? And you, lady, what's on your mind?
Somebody climb around the other side and come in through the window. I don't understand why they don't do it.
Absolutely right. I think
who stays out in the night? Who stays out and crowds the street and spills out into the gutter, rubbernecks to be in on the kill? It was easy to spot the people from the other side of town, the ones who didn't belong around this two-bit burlesque free soup kitchen district. Their jacket and trousers matched from the other side of town. But no different from this side, everybody the same eyes shining, the same taut expectancy in their upturned faces.
All ready? What about it? We're going to use those binoculars?
Mr. Stone.
Yeah? Let's go.
I'll tell a lieutenant. I'll meet you up on the roof.
Okay.
Randy Stone?
Yeah.
My name is Ralph Benton, Mr. Stone.
Oh?
University of Chicago. I'm taking a PhD in psychiatry.
Oh, yeah.
No, no, wait, wait. Will you look, this is what I'm studying. This. The psychology of that man up there.
Oh, later on,
no,
son.
From the time they're children, patterns, behavior patterns, you can tell them.
Sure, I'll see you
No,
later.
Wait, look. I've got to tell somebody about it.
About what?
This is the time when something can be done. People aroused.
Can be done about what?
That kind of a man, Mr. Stone. The psychopath.
Uh-huh. Well, who does what about it?
Well, the people have to do it. They're sick. That kind of person is just sick. You can help through your column.
Yeah, well, it won't help right now up there. I'll see you later,
son. Look, Mr. Stone, I've got a plan. That building on the next block, from the roof.
What about it?
Well, it's right on a line with the church belfry. Now, if you had a rifle with telescopic sights, and you waited for the right chance...
Uh-huh. Yeah, that might work.
Now, listen to me. And listen... You've got no chance up there. You haven't done anything yet. Don't do anything foolish. Come down. We won't harm you.
Why doesn't he answer?
He doesn't want to show himself.
Oh, yeah.
A rifle. One shot. It would have to be one shot. It would have to kill him instantly. Or he'd kill the boy.
NBC is bringing you Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy as Randy Stone.
It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC. We have three fellows we'd like you to meet. I'm speaking about Malone, Kane, and the man called X. Each is in the same business, and a dangerous business it is, outthinking and many times outgunning national as well as international criminals. Make a listening reminder to hear The Amazing Mr. Malone and The Man Called X on Friday, and beginning Sunday, July 1st, Martin Kane, Private Eye. 3 invitations to high adventure over NBC.
And now back to Night Beat and Randy Stone.
I told Lieutenant Sterling about the rifle and the binoculars, and he thought it might be a chance. Risky, because the first shot would have to be the only shot, but a chance. I went to a cigar store on the corner, into a phone booth, and dialed the Southside Hunting Club. I wanted Charlie Peterson, the national champion rifle marksman, and I was lucky. He was there in the club room. I told him what I wanted.
Of course, Randy. I'll have to pick up my gun at the club downstairs in the shop. I left it for a minor adjustment on the sights. I'll meet you on the roof in 15 minutes.
You want to know what it looked like from the top of that building down the street? There were these searchlights pinpointing the stone tower, the tiny windows at the top, No glass of frame other than the cold stone itself. And down below, the fire trucks, the police cars, the crowd of people milling around, their faces turned upward. Occasionally in the darkness, you could see the flash of a photographer's bulb. And over the whole scene, there was a restlessness because up there was a man and a boy. And death was electric in the air. Lieutenant Sterling and Officer Connors were up on the rooftop with me, waiting for Peterson, the rifle marksman, to join us.
You see anything with those binoculars, Stone?
No. You can't see inside that tower. It's just a black hole.
How's Peterson going to aim?
I don't know. There was a way to get some light.
Searchlight?
Yeah, right up here on this roof. It's on a level with that belfry.
Well, we can try. Connors?
Yes?
Let's get a searchlight up here.
It wasn't as simple as it sounded. The firemen worked with the police in rigging up a block and tackle. They put it on the far side of the roof so that the man in the tower couldn't see what was going on if he happened to look our way. In the middle of the preparations, Charlie Peterson arrived, and we had to explain everything to him. And it was quite a lot of explaining.
Sure, I understand. You're going to flash that searchlight on the tower window, and when he sticks his head out, I shoot.
That's right. You shoot once.
About 200 yards. Wish I'd been able to check these sights. Wind drift past 7 miles set it off about 2 inches at 200 yards.
Can't be a near miss, Peterson. If you only wound him, it'll be the end of the child.
200 yards. When are you going to set up that light?
Well, it's being set up now.
When you spot that window, I'll be able to get a good bead.
We can't spot it, Peterson.
Huh?
The minute we throw the spotlight in that window and light up the tower, he'll probably react.
Take it out on the kid.
So we've got to wait until you're ready. When we snap on the light, you've got to be set to fire immediately. We can't even afford to miss the window with the light the first time.
Oh, I see.
You understand it now?
The rifle was in the shop. It's supposed to be true now. It was a 2-inch drift, but even a half inch...
Even a half inch. How big is the heart?
2.5. 3 inches.
200 yards. Maybe I better use a kneeling position. Steady.
Whatever's most comfortable.
Prone's the best, but...
Yeah, I know. I know you can't lie down the wall. This is an awful responsibility, Lieutenant. If someone were on the PA and got to talking to him, maybe he'd show at the window.
Connors, get down there and make with the loudspeaker, huh?
Yes, sir.
Just one shot. Could be a bullseye and still not kill him. Can you see anything over there with the glasses, Stone?
No. How about it, Sterling? We almost ready?
Almost.
All right, Peterson?
All right. Stone.
Yeah?
This is the only way that there's no other way, nothing else to do?
Nothing that we know of. Sure, it's a gamble, but... it's a bigger gamble just waiting for him to do something.
Sure.
It's no disgrace to back out, Peterson.
Games? I only played games with a rifle.
Well, this isn't a game.
Rifle fixed at the shop. Even a half inch miss, I could still hit the bullseye and not kill him.
It isn't a disgrace.
You up there?
That's Connors. Ready, Mr. Peterson?
Release the boy.
Yeah.
I'll give you a three count. When I get to three, you switch on the light, Sterling.
Right.
If the boy is all
You'll do it, Peterson. I'll have my glasses ready. Okay, Sterling?
Go ahead.
You up there.
I'm ready.
One. Two. Three.
Release the boy.
Lights.
Shoot, man, shoot.
I can't see.
Hold it. The window, it's boarded up. He put a board in the window.
I don't think I could have pressed the trigger. I don't think I could have.
That was the end of the roof experiment. Peterson left, and Sterling and I went back down to the street. I started through the crowd, dark faces still upturned, and Sterling went back to the PA.
Why don't they do something? I left Billy sitting in a booth, and I said I'd be right back, but I can't go back in. It just can't go away. Something might happen if I turn my back on.
You haven't killed anyone. You haven't done anything really wrong yet. Come down.
Do you think he's going to...
You won't be hurt. You have our word.
Oh, do you think he's going to listen? He's scared stiff up there. I remember one time I locked myself in the room when I was a kid, and my folks hammered at the door. I couldn't move. I was really scared.
Hello, Mr. Stone.
Oh.
Mr. Stone, yeah. You remember the Hirons case? Well, they follow a pattern. This man broke into a house. He was caught. And to prevent himself being found out, he killed.
Yeah, I remember. But you were kind of young when it happened.
15, but I'm studying it now in class. This man loves it up there. All the fear in him, the hate for the world. He'll show him.
What did you say your name is?
Benton, Ralph Benton. I've got some theories.
Okay, maybe they're theories. What are they?
He doesn't want to kill. He'll only do it if he's forced to. You've got to understand the ego. He feels as though the whole world's against him. He's got to prove himself. It starts out with bragging and... then he feels sorry for himself. Nobody loves him. From infancy on, you can trace the pattern. When he's 7, 8, 10, 12, building all the time, going from stealing something because he's putting something over on the world. Not because he wants what he steals.
You sound like a textbook.
Well, I tell you, Mr. Stone, I've studied. I'm majoring in it. When you understand the psychology of that kind of man, you can find the way to overcome him.
All right. What's your idea?
Everybody leave him alone.
Leave him alone?
Yes. Simple, isn't it? You see, if everybody goes away, the limelight will disappear. He hears that voice on the loudspeaker, and it swells his ego. That's what he wants. He's saying to himself, it's me. It's me. All this fuss and bother, it's for me.
So take away this fuss and bother, and you think he won't harm the boy?
Yes, that's right. He's sick up there. Don't you see? Sick in his mind. Insane. But the law doesn't say he's insane. The law says a person is insane when he can't tell right from wrong. But this man knows the difference between right and wrong, so the law says he's sane.
All right, then what is it?
Well, I say he's insane. He can tell right from wrong, but he can't control himself. He can't keep himself from doing wrong. Isn't that being sick, Mr. Stone?
But why would this man take a young boy along with him?
Well, maybe the boy saw him.
You mean saw him stealing?
Yes, that's right.
Then what?
Maybe he lived around that neighborhood and the man would be exposed as a thief. So what does he do? He wants to protect himself. He doesn't want to kill the boy, but he doesn't want the boy to tell who broke into the house. So what can he do?
Let's push through here. I want to speak to Father Cleary.
Don't you see? Don't you understand? He doesn't want to kill the boy, but all these people are forcing him into it. It's a challenge to his ego. They'll sit up then and take notice. So, look, why don't we leave him alone? Go away. Just everybody go away and take the center of attraction away from him. And then...
He doesn't want to kill?
No.
Sure of that?
Sure.
Here we are. Let's go inside.
It's so quiet in here.
Yeah. Hello, Father.
Is there anything new, Randy?
Maybe. Let's go over there, Ralph.
Yes.
Another element of the psychopath, Ralph, is that he likes to flirt with danger. Unless people know him as an individual, he doesn't get any pleasure out of being the center of attraction.
Yes.
Right here. First, you tell me a rifle shot is a good way to stop him. And then you put a board over the window. That told me, Ralph. That told me.
I knew it would.
How did you get down from the belfry?
An old passageway down to the basement through the... tunnel that leads to Father Cleary's house behind the church.
Uh-huh.
You can kneel if you want to, son. It'll be easier that way.
Yes, Father, I want to kneel.
It's all right now, Randy.
Thank you, Father. I'm going upstairs and get Jody Levering. So it was Sanctuary after all, wasn't it? Jody was unharmed, frightened, though. It left a deeper scar on his mother and father. It left a scar on me, too. I wonder how many of those people out there on the street felt cheated. Nothing happened. Nothing. No murder. No killing. Nobody thrown out of the tower. All it was that somebody came to church for Sanctuary. Yep. Copy, boy.
Night Beat, starring Frank Lovejoy, is produced and directed by Warren Lewis. Tonight's transcribed story was written by Celie Glester and Merwin Gerard, with music by Robert Armbruster. The part of Benton was played by Stacey Harris. Others in tonight's cast were Joan Banks, Norman Field, John Stevenson, Harry Bartell, Jack Crucian, and Ted DeCorsia. Frank Lovejoy can currently be seen co-starring with Joan Crawford and Robert Young in Warner Brothers' Goodbye, My Fancy. Listen next week at this time and every week as Randy Stone searches through the city for the strange stories waiting for him in the darkness. Night Beat came to you from Hollywood.
It's the Silver Jubilee on NBC.
Beginning in 2 weeks, another top mystery show, Martin Kane, Private Eye, joins your NBC lineup. And here is the star of this new series, one of your favorite motion picture actors, Lloyd Nolan.
Thank you. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, on Sunday, July 1st, I'll be on hand as Martin Kane, Private Eye, my new role on this same station.
Listen to Lloyd Nolan as Martin Kane, Private Eye, on this same NBC station every Sunday beginning July 1st.
Hear the amazing Mr. Malone tonight on NBC.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Radio Download. We'll be back next week with more great old-time radio for you. Until then, this is Jim Dolan, thanking you for listening.